ओमज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कृतामायं ददाति सापदन्तिकम्. पञ्चकौपतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुवैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री वासुदेव गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. Greeting from Visan Falls for the Wednesday night Sangha. We've been continuing this for about 5 years. And this summer, I guess it's Srila Prabhupada's grace, I've been very, very busy giving different seminars, and it requires that a lot of times it takes a lot of research and effort to prepare ones, because I'm constantly giving new ones. This year I prepared quite a few new seminars. And now on Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Boston Yoga and Chant Festival, I was invited to lecture, and I think the first principle about lecturing, well, not the first, but there should be an audience, so I try to present a seminar that'll be a bit unique called Drama as Yoga. And then within that, to demonstrate drama as yoga, there's an original drama. So I'm in that drama. I've never actually acted before, although I tell stories. I'm on the stage in the sense of my service of taking people around the Dham and telling stories, etc. But this particularly entails learning lines. So I've been spending most of the time that I usually have for studying and reading just learning a script. So as the kind of format of this class is I just try to share with you what I'm doing. And excuse me, not only what I'm doing, but what I'm studying, what I'm thinking, and what I'm teaching. So this is it. So today, I've done this before, but, it's not enough to know a subject. You have to package it for the audience. I've explained that many, many times, that as important as speaking truth is having truth understood. And now so you have to think really, really deeply how to do that. And there comes a particular point where you get it. I haven't got it yet for that. And therefore, I'm going to try to share that with you again today. And one of the reasons is because I'm learning these lines. And also, I'll share with you at least the the drama or my lines. I'll even practice, see if I could remember the lines, although I'll have the script before me. So this subject of drama as yoga, you know, often when I'm in the yoga world, of course, you have to speak to people's frame of reference. And there's a common frame of reference in yoga. Yoga is basically based on the philosophy of Sankhya, that there's a difference between the Purusha or Atman, the soul, and the body. And the purpose of yoga is to come to the point where you can basically act on the platform of the soul by neglecting the impulses of the body and the mind. So there's a basic principle in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras it described, because I think one important thing is that I should explain why I'm talking about drama in the Boston Yoga and Chant Festival. Everything in any book, any seminar, it has to be connected to a theme. And a theme is what connects those things, even which are apparently unrelated. So what does drama have to do with yoga? Well, first you have to understand what is yoga. And of course, yoga, chitta, vritti, nirodha, everyone, to stop the fluctuations of the mind. The mind is like an instrument. And when the instrument is distorted, then one's perception is distorted. When the instrument is distorted, one sees the world in a selfish, egotistical way, which binds one in the world. That's the consciousness which binds one in the world. So ignorance is when the pure, eternal, blissful soul identifies with the impure, temporary, material body. And therefore, we suffer due to that misperception. So basically, all forms of spiritual enlightenment, or basically all forms of spiritual enlightenment, have some commonality to get one out of a selfish, self-centered, egotistical conception where one sees oneself in the center and sees everything else as an object. You separate yourself. And what's the separation? The separation is you see yourself as the enjoyer and the controller. And you look at other things in relationship to your desire. So any form of spiritual life is to get one out of that consciousness. Because that consciousness is what ruins one on every level. It rules one individually, it's the consciousness that rules one collectively, and saintly people are concerned. They're concerned to give people the right conception. And even if they have a different theistic bent, the commonality is to get one out of the selfish. You can look at material consciousness is selfishness and spiritual consciousness as selflessness. So there's a history in India of the role of drama in doing that. Kind of bringing one out of the selfish conception of life, where one is just focused so much on one's own personal desire, which separates one from everyone else. Because you are the one, you are the controller, you are the enjoyer. And everyone else is meant for you. So there's a history of that. And I just thought, like, I would explain basically the history of that, and particularly highlight the role of drama in the bhakti tradition. I mean, it's essential in the bhakti tradition. Even in relationship, it's the yoga and chant festival. But even I'll explain in relationship to kirtan why the aesthetic experience or the power of the aesthetic experience is even very much related to kirtan. So there's a Natya Shastra. Natya Shastra is the scripture or how you command your life by the rules of drama. And the earliest known is by Bharat Muni. And he describes the origin of this Shastra, and like in many, many stories, there's some kind of perception that people are greedy, egotistical, and therefore a threat to themselves and others. And there's a sense that the divine has to the divine has to interfere by giving some directions. It's like in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya lanir bhavati bharata. Wherever and whenever there's a disruption in dharma, and the right course of action to actually, and the right course of action are those actions that bring you closer to the soul. So whenever there is a disruption in that, there's some kind of divine interference. So, and then it's described that Indra, one of the gods, he perceives that, you know, people are becoming egotistical and self-centered, and there's a problem, and they need the Vedas to be presented in another way. And this is also a common understanding, that there's knowledge, but do you have the capability to access it? Even the history of the Vedas, that it couldn't be understood. It's divided into four. And then there's still a problem that it's codified to the Vedanta Sutra. And then it has to be illustrated in story form, which is the Mahabharata. So there's a conception of fifth Veda, You know, something else is needed. It needs to be communicated in another way for people. They're not capable of digesting it in the form that it's originally there. So they wanted something more visible, something more audible. So Lord Brahma, who is the chief engineer, the creator of the universe, he goes into meditation and he gives the Natya Shastra. And then he announces that this drama will therefore provide instructions to everyone in the world through all its actions, emotional states, which are bhavas and rasa. And rasa is this, through this aesthetic experience. Not just it will instruct you, but you'll have an experience that will help you to become a better person. And from this time on, the central part of any drama was to develop, in other words, drama was to develop a mechanism to cope with ego. And that was called rasa. Basically a mechanism to cope with ego. And that was called rasa. And therefore, Bharat Muni, in other words, this aesthetic experience would bring one out. Because what is aesthetic experience? You're having an experience, but it's divorced from your personal interests. So it has a sense of being transcended to our selfishness. And his conception of it wasn't so deeply spiritual, but just moving people away from a limited egotistical conception that was antisocial and ruined the... And he developed, therefore, I mean, he a complex, dramatic theory on how to recreate the emotions that are felt in the world so that the audience can experience them. But they experience them not connected with their personal interests, and this was a transcendent experience. And it's a very beautiful, complex theory, and if you see dramas written with this way, they're very scientific. They know exactly how to invoke those particular emotions in people. And I don't know, it's beyond the scope to explain it now, but basically, there's a dominant emotion of amorous feeling or tragedy or humor, etc. And then he studied it very, very deeply. He studied how are these feelings created in the world. And now we can duplicate them in the drama, and then people can experience them. But they'll experience this feeling, this aesthetic experience, this joy, a devoid of their personal interest. It's a very intense feeling, but it's not personal and very different from the personal egotistical concern. And basically, you have the characters of the play and the setting, and then the actions in the play and accessory emotions. And if you have the appropriate ones for the particular feeling that you're trying to invoke, you'll bring this feeling to the height. And if you can duplicate that feeling, then the audience will have some kind of healthy, intense experience, which was devoid of ego, will make them a better person. But he didn't go very deeply. And then later, other people would begin to relate this to deeply to actual spiritual experience, and the role of drama became actually part of whatever spiritual path one was seeking. And they would make a parallel between yogic ecstasy. because the aesthetic experience, one would step out of ordinary time and space, and most important, you would step out of that egotistical identity. Of course, initially it was by the Kashmiri Shaivites, and they were Advaita Vedantists. That's not my particular school. But they would have an impersonal joy, because the experience was not happening to you personally. And it was an experience that was shared among the audience. And during that experience, you step out of ordinary time, space, and it would have a power of abolishing the limited personality of the spectator and it would have the effect of somehow bringing you away from the mental condition that kind of prevents the light of the soul from shining through, the feeling of oneness. And then later on it was expanded even more, that drama would give you an incredible feeling of oneness, because what drama can do is it can give everyone in the audience the same experience. It would give everyone at the same experience. And that was known, that each person in the audience would share a common experience, a kind of oneness. And any speaker knows this, that when you speak, you have to create a common audience. You have to create a unified mind. A kind of a merging of the audience, a unified experience. Then eventually, Rupa Goswami, and his take on it was a little bit different. I can see I have still have a long way to work on this, but I'll get it. And the difference with Rupa Goswami is. It's very interesting when you study. You have to understand. It forces you to understand something, things so deeply. And his emphasis was not so much bringing people out of their ordinary everyday experience, but he felt that the experience that one could have within a drama could actually parody the true experience in the world. I think what I can do here is actually just show that drama was taken both from an impersonal conception and a personal conception, and maybe explain the difference between. Maybe I can start just... it's a different conception of the self. There's oneness, but there's a difference at the same time. It's just like you point to my hand, it's my body, my nose, my hand is my body, my nose is my, but my hand is not the nose. It has a function in relationship to the whole. And basically, he said, rasa vaisaha, that rasa, that experience, is reality. That's what the absolute reality is. It is experience. And the real rasa, the main emotion that people would have is intense love and devotion for the divine. I guess that's like Ishvara Pranidhan. And that what a drama does it allows the audience to adopt the feeling of the drama. So not just to remove one from any ego, from any individual experience, but to give one a pure individual experience. And that pure individual experience is bhakti or devotion. I see I still have to work on this part. Anyway, I'm going to just, what's going to happen is, I'm not satisfied yet with that presentation. I really have to work at it. And it's good that I get to speak beforehand, because I see it. It's just a depth of understanding. I have to really get into that more. But anyway, what I want to do is I want to actually present a drama and actually explain that the main way in which part of spiritual life is identity. We have the wrong identity. So part of spiritual life is to get the right identity. And how do you get the right identity? You get the right identity from exemplars. You get the right identity from exemplars. So in the bhakti path, what one is trying to develop is a sense of selflessness and devotion, a sense of purity. And what's the best way to communicate feelings and transfer feelings? It's through poetry and through drama. So part of the spiritual path, part of the spiritual path is drama that communicates particular feelings. I'm getting some good ideas now what I'm going to do. It's so good. Thank you for allowing me to practice on you. I'm seeing that my mind works when I speak. It seems like I first just have to explain, give simple examples of, because our basic principle is it was actually a great book called, Acting is a Way of Salvation. And he explains that, an actor and the audience live the world of the character being acted. So the character should express pure consciousness. And if the character expresses pure consciousness and you have an appreciation for that, then that pure consciousness comes to you. So drama tries to parody the ultimate reality. In this tradition, it's that. It's to enter a world of a particular meaning, objective. Happiness is a heart filled with devotion. This is the bhakti tradition. In other words, it parodies what is the ultimate experience, which is selflessness and purity and ultimate love and devotion. And therefore, when you, so drama has this ability. What drama is that there's an experience, and then there's an experience, and then someone who's very expert, he can recreate that experience, and then the audience can have that experience. So in bhakti tradition, there is an ultimate experience. That ultimate experience is selfless and pure love. And it can be recreated. I'm watching my mind now, and I'm seeing how I'm going to probably do this. And it can be recreated. And the way it's recreated, it is dramatical rules, and then goes back to this Natya Shastra. There's a Shastra. I'm just kind of watching my mind and seeing how now it's how I have to do this. I have to start with what bhakti drama is. And I even have an idea how to start it. Yeah, I'm very, very interesting. I'll start it with that story of my grandmother and grandfather. Anyway, it's I can't do that now. Yeah, so drama as yoga, I'm going to start again and then I'm going to go quickly. It's to get out of an egotistical view and somehow be situated in something higher. And what bhakti says is that something higher, that perfectional state, is basically Ishvara Pranidhan, when one gives oneself to the divine with full devotion. And to actually recreate that experience, Indian dramaturg has said that you can't do it by ordinary life, you can't do it by words. There's something about drama and a poetry that encapsulates a particular experience and emotion and transfers it in a very, very effective way. So the bhakti tradition believes that the Bhagavad Purana, the Bhagavatam, is a perfect expression of that. And therefore, their whole tradition is based on reading and understanding these type of stories that have this powerful effect on you. And that's what I'm going to try to do there. We're going to actually write an original story to try to do this. Okay, I'm feeling better now, but I don't have time to give the class that I should have gotten in the beginning. So I don't know who you, but it's clear in my mind now what I have to do. And okay, so what we did is with Alex, so he can't be there, but there's a very nice young budding actress named Hillary who will play the part of a cowherd boy. And I'm the monk. The drama is the monk and the thespian. So it begins with me as the monk. I'm not myself, but I'm another person. But so let me see if I can remember my script and see if it intrigues you. When I was younger and the world was younger, and our spirits were younger, I lived in the mystical land of Vrindavan, which I suppose too is younger, though really it is an ageless place. In this city there are magnificent temples, sages and sadhus and saintly widows, and rich and colorful history, monkeys. And at that time, no cell phones or computers, I was charged with saving the ancient Vaishnav libraries, libraries filled with old misty books, all but forgotten tombs that contain deep and esoteric passages of spiritual history and wisdom. In such a library previously belonging to Prime Krishna Baba, it seemed that all the volumes were far too damaged by time and lack of proper care to be salvageable. I was prepared to abandon the books, but one book was lying on the floor apart from the collection. I immediately picked it up, regardless of the title or the condition. No sacred book should be left on the floor. To my amazement, it was in near perfect condition. I began to turn the page and I glanced at the began to turn the cover and I glanced at the first page. Hari Lila Prakash, 17th century, Sri Damodar Bahulana, scribed by Sri Damodar Bahulana. I never heard of the author, but as I began to read, his claims and insights were remarkable. He claimed to be a descendant of one of Krishna's intimate associates, Vasant, his great 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 grandson, and so on. Hari Lila Prakash is a personal account from Vasant of his friendly exploits in the beautiful surrounding forest, Vrindavan Forest. I'm remembering my lines. So far, I'm pretty good. I remember. In the beautiful Vrindavan Forest, my dear friends, you can imagine my hands were shaking. Hair on my neck was standing on end. I felt like I was, I realized I was holding a precious jewel. It's as if the book wanted me to find it. Among the most fascinating, among the most fascinating aspects of the book is an excerpt from the appendix entitled Krishna Lila, A Reasonable Conception of Divinity. Sri Damodar writes that his lifelong concern is that the pastimes of Krishna shouldn't be thought as merely fables or mundane. And thus the deep spiritual import of the text would be lost. My friends, listen to his ideas. I think you'll appreciate their significance. Sri Damodar Bahulanath writes, all of us are seeking pleasure, and our greatest pleasure is found in pure, unmotivated love. If pure love is our guiding and universal principle, then why should it not be part of its source, the ultimate reality? pure love entails a mutual exchange, then the one harmonious truth must have a type of discrimination. There must be personality, beauty, and other qualities to enhance that flow of love. The flow of love is known as Shakti or energy, and like all energy, devoted to bringing pleasure to its source. Thus, the Vaishnav conception of reality is divine Leela, a drama that stages the perfect expression of pure love, an exchange of devotion between the source of all energy, Sri Krishna, and the supreme Shakti, Radha. My friends, I felt like weeping. Such a complex concept, but explained in such a simple and understandable way. I understood now why the great Vaishnav is thus right of rasa, the height of such divine love, as that which we appreciate gradually belongs to us. By relishing these divine leelas, purity and affection increasingly awakens in our heart. Sri Damodar Bahulanath continued, and just as love and pleasure to be appreciated to its fullest requires a variety of loving exchanges, why should not friendship, parental affection, and the love of secret and intimate dalliance not exist in its pure sense in the divine realm? I should explain for those who don't know, Krishna is a beautiful cowherd that takes care of his father's cows. The job affords him the opportunity to befriend other boys occupied with the same task. They would gallivant in all over Vrindavan, playing in the fields, resting in the shades, trees, sharing wonderful meals on the bank of the Jamuna all the while, deepening their mutual affection and admiration. But in Vrindavan, as everywhere, there are those opposed to any trace of the ceaseless flow of divine love. Demons. If you think about it deeply, does not the challenges to love afford the opportunity to increase... Do not the challenges to love only afford opportunity to increase our affection? Did you ever fear the loss of a loved one? Was it not at those times that our affection reached its heights? This is why I'm so excited to share this. Hari Vilas, Hari Leela Prakash, tells the stories of such unmotivated love. Maybe I have time to read one first, just a little background. One day the waters of the river Jamuna were visited by a multi-headed serpent named Kaliya. He was poisoning the waters with the stench and fumes emanating from his hideous body, causing the creatures drinking or even approaching the waters to immediately die. Beautiful or most beautiful Krishna would not stand for such travesty, for this demon was threatening the livelihood and wonder of his home, his friends, his family, and all his loved ones. So he took the matter into his own hands and, as you can imagine, caused unimaginable anxiety for the residents of Vrindavan who loved Krishna more than their own life. Imagine how they felt. No, don't imagine, dear friends. Do not right for me to keep all the treasure of Sri Damodar Bhagavanath, to keep all of Sri Damodar Bhagavanath's treasure to myself. Let us hear an account from a witness to the feats of Krishna that day on the Jamuna. Listen carefully, for one who hears those pastimes with attention awakens the same causeless love in their heart. Sri Damodar Bhagavanath says, upon returning home late one day from the forest, after Krishna's horrifying and then glorious struggle with the Kaliya serpent, I, the Sant, approached my worried mother, who was anxiously waiting at the door with her arms crossed and a stick in her hand. Anyway, as I learn it more, I will be able to put more emotion into it.